Kia ora and welcome to episode 13 of the Kiwi Running Show. Hayden, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah.
Happy birthday.
Cheers. Cheers. It's funny, I was telling Charlotte, your wife, when I came in that I try and be real grumpy about my birthday. Like, yeah. I just don't want to hear about it. I always had this attitude of, it's just another day. No, don't bother me. But it's quite nice getting all like the Facebook messages and texts and stuff.
Yeah.
It's becoming a bit soppy in my old age, obviously. So 37.
God. Yeah.
And I actually...
Are you 37?
Yeah. And I actually genuinely... forgot, like I thought I was celebrating my 36th year, but yeah. No, it's 37 now.
So. You lose track, eh? I reckon once you hit 30, it's like you don't really want, you don't want the years, the birthdays to come around.
Nah, well, and it's officially midlife as well, because I'm halfway to 74, and you know, to be honest, that's a good run, 74. Yeah. I always think of it in terms of a cricket score. And I was always more of a bowler than a batsman, so I'd be pretty happy with 74.
Yeah.
Go well. But yeah.
Did you hear about that? I think he's from Indonesia.
145 years old.
That's ridiculous.
Born in 1870.
Yeah.
Yeah, so born before the Olympics took place.
Do you reckon he just was digging through a bunch of like birth certificates and he's like, oh, this one's mine. And
yeah,
it's like
his dad
or something, or granddad with the same name.
My grandfather didn't know how old he was.
Really?
Like, he had no idea. He's, my mum's stepdad was
he
my granddad. Chinese.
Kenyan?
No, he's Chinese. He was Chinese. Really? Yeah. Wow. So his father came over to gold mine and then brought him over when he was like 6 or 7,
and
but they
no
don't
idea.
Know, no birth certificate. They're from a small town in China. So he was like, oh, I'm about. So he knew within 2 or 3 years, and they did end up picking a day for documentation, which became his birthday, but no idea if that was his birthday.
Far
or
out.
So. God, we go
we've already gone on tangent and we've only just begun. So welcome to the show, everyone.
Yeah, welcome.
Good to
along.
Have you here.
What's on the agenda today, Hayden?
Yep, so we've got some local news as always, a bit of action around the traps, a very cold, rainy ultra race down in the South Island, a bunch of half marathons, and then some post-Olympics. Athletics season still happening in the Northern Hemisphere. It hasn't finished yet with the Olympics. So
still going strong.
Yeah, things are still cranking along.
Yeah, and so it's going to be an excellent show, but the goal, I think, for us today, Hayden, has to be to keep it under an hour.
Yeah, things have been getting a bit long.
And so it's had a couple of effects. People are listening when they run.
Yeah,
they're running too far. They're getting stress fractures.
Getting
colds. So
I mean, when we started the show, we were kind of thinking, let's produce a show that you can listen to on your easy run. So 45-50 minutes.
Yeah, I was like, let's keep them short, because obviously we're both fans of podcasts and we listen to them. I prefer shorter ones, and we've just gone the complete opposite route.
Yeah, see, like, I love long ones.
Yeah.
My favorite one, just releasing an episode of 5 hours long.
Wow.
Yeah, good old Dan Carlin and his hardcore history.
He's
love
good.
It.
I've been listening to those. They're good.
Yeah.
Anyway, off topic again. Shall we get started with some local news?
Yeah. So shall we start from Cambridge Half Marathon?
Yeah, Cambridge Half Marathon. You're going to have to bear with me while I bring it up.
That's all right.
But some good results in the Cambridge Half Marathon, and a name that will be familiar to a lot of people. Steve Rees-Jones won the event in 1:14:14 for a half marathon.
Nice.
So he's an Englishman, Steve Rees-Jones.
Yeah.
He's been in New Zealand for a while now, but back in his day, he was close to being a sub-4-minute miler.
Yeah, nice.
And so, it's great to see him still, you know, super involved in the sport and banging out good times. And so then on the women's side, Alice Mason taking the win in 1:20:34.
Nice.
Pretty good running.
Very cool.
And so Johanna Otterson in second in 1:26. And a Chinese visitor, Zheng Cheng Lin from Taipei City, was third. Pretty cool. And
awesome.
And I saw there's like a girl from Spain won the 10K. So apparently,
bit of an international field.
Yeah, Cambridge is becoming an international sporting. It actually kind of is. Like Cambridge is pretty cool.
It is a bit,
Have you been down? No, I won't go off topic.
Yeah.
With the rowing and the triathlon and the cycling. So
yeah.
Cool little town. And I think the half marathon kind of benefits from that. So. Yeah,
totally.
Excellent. A few other.
Skipping across the hills to the mount.
Yeah, the Hawaiian Airlines half marathon.
Yeah.
How did they manage to pull down that sponsorship?
Yeah, I know.
They did really well. So
yeah. I've got to say, when you look on the website, it does look really tropical and really nice.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think the weather they got at the weekend wasn't so so tropical. It was a bit,
anything
breezy.
But tropical. So yeah, from what we understand, a really strong headwind for at least half of the race.
Yeah, and they start in Papamoa and finish at the mount. So anyone who's stayed in Papamoa and thought, oh, I'll run to the mount, it's actually quite a long way.
It's long, flat, and boring in a lot of respects until you get close to the mount. So yeah, and into a headwind. The time's not great, but not terrible. So Sasha Daniels taking the win in 1:17:18, and on the women's side, Maggie Athro 1:22:01. So that woman's time is actually, that stacks up really well. So probably the performance of the day. So heading down to the top of the south in Blenheim, the Woodburn half marathon, Stephen Blackwell taking the win in 1:16:55, followed by Mel Aitken.
Oh, nice.
1:26:20. She just have shoes, will race. And all over the South Island. Like, she doesn't hold back. Like, Blenheim's not close to where she lives on the West Coast.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. Excellent. And any other local results, Hayden?
Oh, the Great Nasby Water Race.
Ah, that's it. Yes. Thank you. I knew there was one. That's why I was asking the question, because I knew there was one.
Now, tell me, do you know, are there any other 100 milers in New Zealand? Yes. Is this the only 100 mile race?
No, there is another one. The Rootburn. Isn't Rootburn 100 miles? Or
I didn't think so, but.
So this is the longest standing 100. There is another 100.
Yeah.
I'm sure. But I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's got to be. Or there's a 24 hour race, which most people cover 100 miles in that.
Yeah, yeah.
So. Yeah. I'll do some research and tell you next week.
Yeah, so this one, they cover like a 10K course going up and down.
Yeah.
And it's funny, it's actually kind of slightly at altitude. I don't know if you'd feel it, but it's sort of 600 or 700 meters high. So, yeah, you know, reasonably high.
Yeah. And we're only aware of the 100 mile results. Obviously, there's an associated 100 kilometers and 80 and even a 50. And they run around in a loop. From what we know, the track turned to mud and slush overnight. Oh, man. So the winner of the women's race described the run as brutal. Brutal. And, you know, she's out there for a long time, 28 hours, far 4 minutes out. And 28 seconds. So that's a real, you know, that's a huge feat of endurance. That's a long time to keep moving.
If I was doing a race like that, I would actually stop and have a nap. Yeah. For a couple of hours.
Oh, she may have. I don't know. So that's Kendra Breen of Alexander. So she did Alexandra. Sorry.
Nice.
So she did.
So local, basically.
Yeah, really well. And then not a local, Paul Munro has come over from Melbourne to win the men's race. And I'm going to pause for a moment here. 100 miles is 160 kilometers.
161, officially.
Yep. And so he ran that far in 14 hours and 37 minutes.
Nice.
Absolutely steaming. Yeah. So you were kind of working this out. This is more than 11 kilometers an hour, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, 10K an hour, so that's 6 minute Ks. You'd be doing it in 16 hours.
Yeah.
So if he's under that, must be around 11.
Yeah, it's really fast.
My calculator.
So the previous record was held by a guy called Marty Lukes, who is one of New Zealand's best ever ultramarathoners, definitely the best in the last decade or so on the men's side. And the record was 15 hours 30. So Paul Munro has come over and broken the record by almost an hour.
Wow.
And in mud and slush. So it's just phenomenal. A crazy good performance. I Googled him a little bit, and he's won some races in Australia, but you know, that time indicates to me that he could be a real top finisher at like the Tarawera or, you know, a Badwater or something. So
it's often hard with ultra runners when you go online and see what they've run. It's always comparing who they've beaten on the day or times on that course. And because a lot of the courses they run are so hilly and crazy terrain.
Yeah.
And then you get like this, you get all sorts of bad weather. And so it's hard to compare race to race.
And the competition pool is so small that, you know, it's easy to not go to the big races and win a lot. And
Yeah,
people will never know how good or bad you are. And not that it's all about that, but yeah.
Yeah,
it's an interesting aspect to the sport, and more so than a marathon, and definitely more so than shorter distance racing. The potential to have a really bad day is quite high, particularly when you factor in heat, cold, altitude,
nutrition
can go to all of these things can just make you have a terrible day. So a lot of respect for people who do ultras and are really consistent.
I mean, 16 hours, or this guy did it in 14 hours.
14 and a half hours, yeah.
But even that long, you got to be thinking about proper meals. You can't just live off gels.
Yeah, no, you need
electrolytes.
Yeah.
You got to be eating sandwiches and
I think that's the main things. I think that's the relatively
weird
accepted
like
in that
pickles
world.
And, yeah. All right, so that's the local news. Coming up this next weekend, actually, is the National Road Champs down in Masterton. So the 10K champs.
Yep, that's going to be very exciting.
Yeah, so that'll be pretty big. I had a quick look through the start list, actually, and they do look pretty competitive. No Oscar on the start line, though.
Yeah.
Which is a shame, but Jono Jackson's going to be there and Daniel Belchin. So it'll be interesting to see how those two get on going head-to-head.
Yep.
On the ladies. Yeah, there's a few lining up with the ladies.
Well, and the one name that sticks out there is Laura Nagel. She's just on absolutely, she's in barnstormingly good form at the moment. So I'd be happy to lay a couple of bob on her. I think she'll go really well.
The other name there that's sort of standing out is Lydia O'Donnell, who wasn't in the cross country champs, but she's recently done
2:42 for a marathon.
Yeah, and then 2:39 last year, it was.
Yeah.
So those two could go head to head.
Yeah, and that's really interesting. Yeah. It'll be really interesting for me to see how Lydia goes stepping back down to a shorter distance after having run a couple of marathons.
Yeah, yeah.
Laura Nagel, she's never been up to, I don't even know if she's run a half marathon. So, you know, coming from different ends of the spectrum, Do you want to put a quiet, I don't know, $5 bet on this, Hayden? You're backing Lydia? Go on. Just say
I'll go with Lydia.
Okay, I'm going to go with Laura. So
what about the men?
I'm picking Belchin, actually.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'll go with Jono.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Good man.
Most times, recently, when someone's won the cross country champs, they come back and win roads a few weeks later. So, my money's on Jono.
Yeah.
All right. So that's the New Zealand local news. Let's move on to the international news. All right. So the international news, and there's been a lot going on. The Olympics hasn't put an end to the athletic season, which is kind of weird because you have this major high.
Yeah.
And then it's like, there's still stuff happening.
Yeah.
People are still competing.
Yeah. And it's probably one of those ones we're so far away from Europe that we don't.
Yeah.
You know, it's the middle of winter here. We've done with the Olympics.
We're watching rugby and going up the mountain, going skiing and stuff. It's not.
But it probably makes perfect sense over in Europe where it's beautiful sunshine and.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and all of the athletes who are now newly minted Olympic medalists, they're heading out and they're looking to cash in.
Yeah.
So they're like, hey, give me some appearance fees, you know, what's the prize money at this event? So
And I think there's two type of athlete that compete now. There's the one I did really good at the Olympics and they cash in, like you say, and then there's the others who are like, girl, I didn't do good enough.
Yeah.
I'm coming back and doing my rebound performances.
Well, and I feel terrible for athletes who don't get their timing quite right.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're gonna talk about Tom Walsh.
Yeah.
Do you think this is an example of that?
I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say that a bronze medal is a disappointment for him. But certainly in light of this, just at the weekend at the Paris Diamond League, he pulled off a massive, massive PB Oceania record.
Yeah, New Zealand Oceania record of 22 meters. So 22.00, which is beats his personal best by 22 centimeters.
Yeah.
So really great throw.
And the other big news is that he beat Ryan Crozier, the American who won the gold, by a centimeter.
And Joe Kovacs, the American who won the silver.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh, man. So it's like, did he peak 2 weeks late or did he? Is he just building on form? I'd probably say the latter.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the press that I've seen around it is he wasn't expecting to throw 22 and to a certain extent perhaps it's just the pressure of the Olympics have come off and you know the form might have been there but he couldn't quite get it out at the Olympics but either way the 22 is wow.
That's, he just keeps like blowing my mind. Like talk about gradual progression. He just keeps on chipping away, getting better. And never taking like massive leaps forward, but always just increasing, like such a steady performer.
Yeah.
Just this, I'd love to see a graph of his improvements over the last couple of years. Cause man, he's really proving to be, he's leading the Diamond League at the moment.
Yeah, he is. And, that in and of itself is pretty huge.
Yeah.
Not so much in terms of status, but in terms of payday. Like if he comes through and wins the overall Diamond League race for the shot put, he'll be in for a pretty good.
He won't have to do much building this summer.
I'm not sure if they actually pay in diamonds still, but previous to this, it was the Golden League, and they did literally pay you in gold. we're definitely going to keep up to date with Tom over the next couple of weeks to see how he goes. But yeah, exciting stuff.
Yeah, totally. And it was actually a final round throw that he dropped that. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
To win by a centimetre. On that same day, Ruth Jibbett won the 3K steeples in a new world record. So she ran 8:52. And it was interesting in the Olympics because she won the gold, but she was on track for the world record.
Yes.
But she just jogged the last 20 metres.
And do you know about this? Do you know why this happens?
No, I don't.
Yeah, so within the Diamond League is a cohesive series, but each event will have its own prize structure on top of the Diamond League race.
Yeah, yeah.
And so by running a world record at one of these meets, you'll get quite a tidy bonus, as well as a bonus from your sponsor and all this stuff. If you run a world record at the Olympics doesn't pay you a bonus for setting that world record. So,
totally.
Yeah.
Oh, that makes sense then. Yeah. Totally makes sense.
There was a pole vaulter, an Australian pole vaulter, Melinda, forget her last name anyway, and she broke the world record well over a dozen times. I want to say 16, 20 times. She would only break it by a centimetre on each time. So in practice, she knew that she was a good 20 centimetres ahead of the world record.
Yeah.
She'd go to a meet, break the world record by a centimetre.
Pick up the paycheck.
Yeah, $10,000 bonus each time you break the world record. So yeah,
very clever.
Yeah.
Well, I'll remember that next time I'm going for a world record at the Olympics.
Yep.
Tuck that one away. Mm-hmm. And also Laura Muir, the 1500 meter girl. She ran a world lead in the 1500.
Yeah. And I don't want to put you on the spot here, Hayden, but where did she finish at Rio?
Well, she was only seventh.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So she's one of those athletes who you got to say maybe didn't peak right. It was a totally different race, the Olympics. It's like 20 seconds slower. But yeah, she was 4 seconds off the pace.
Yeah.
And today, you know, she's hammering those girls. So
yeah. And so what was her crazy time?
3:55.
Yeah. And so my understanding is that if you take away the Chinese and
DeBarber, most recent.
There's another dodgy nation in there.
It might be an Eastern European time from the 80s or 90s or something.
So if you take out some of these interesting times, then it's basically right up there, like one of the best times ever run. So certainly the best time ever run by a Brit by a long shot. That's
and beating Kelly Holmes' record, that's phenomenal.
Yeah.
So that's very cool. Also, Val Adams beat the Michelle Carter, the Olympic medalist. So that's another another one of those stories. Like, oh, if only. But didn't quite throw as far as Rio, both of them. But yeah, interesting.
Yep. And I know you've got a little bit of Nick Willis news, but before we get to that, I think we should give a bit of love to our Paralympians.
Yeah.
So we're just a matter of days. So this time next week will be 1 or 2 days away from the opening ceremony of the Rio Paralympic Games. And our team currently are in the Gold Coast doing some training.
Yep.
They were there over the weekend. To be honest, they'll be on their way to America now. They're training there somewhere. So some really great results. Anna Grimaldi, who is primarily a long jumper, set a New Zealand record in the 100 metres. So this won't mean much. Anna Grimaldi's a T47.
Yeah.
You're like, okay. So she's a single leg amputee.
Okay, so T stands for track, isn't it?
Yes, yeah.
And then 47 is the classification
So it's relatively complex. But anyway, she ran 100 metres in 13.13 seconds.
Yeah, nice.
That's faster than you, Hayden. pretty good. The big one to me that jumps out, Liam Malone, who I've talked about a little bit. He's the Blade Runner. So he's a T44, which means he's got a below the knee amputation on both legs.
Yeah.
And the reason we know the class T44 is that's the class Oscar Pistorius was in. And it's the most competitive class within the Paralympic Games. So he ran a New Zealand record in the 100 meters of 11.17 seconds.
Wow.
Which would.
That's definitely faster than me.
Yeah. And so that would rank him in the top 50. In New Zealand.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's running with blades, which blades are really fast once you get going, but it's quite hard to get up to speed in blades. The big news, which is kind of, it's flown under the radar. No one's talking about it, but he ran 300 meters in 34.08 seconds.
Wow.
So that bodes really, really well for Rio.
Yeah.
So you were saying
he's targeting the 400.
He's a 400 meter runner. He's also running the 200. He has the fastest time in the world thus far over 400 meters. But it's only like 47 seconds. This 34 for 300 tells me that he's ready to run 46 seconds.
Yeah, yeah. If he's got the engine to keep going, certainly.
Look, and I don't know. We don't know what will happen at Rio, but it is within reason to think Liam Malone will become New Zealand's fastest human being over 400 metres.
Wow. What's the New Zealand record?
New Zealand record dates back to 1998, and Sean Farrell ran 46.09.
Wow.
So Sean Farrell was an 800 metre runner who broke the record, but the record before that dates back to the 60s. It was a guy, Bevan Smith, who ran 46.1.
So we haven't had anyone under in the 45s.
No, we've been really poor over 400.
That's really surprising.
Looking at the Olympic, I watched the Olympic qualifying, we wouldn't have had anyone get through the first round.
Yeah,
so even if you ran a New Zealand record, you would not qualify for the Olympic Games. Not even close. So we've fallen a bit behind over 400 meters. But
do you think that's because a lot of our 400 runners step up and become middle distance runners?
No, I think 100-meter guys who could be 400-meter guys are good enough to win the New Zealand champs over 100 and 200. So
you may as well be the fastest guy in the country rather than plug away at
the
400 workouts.
We don't have great depth over the sprints. We've got a few good coaches, but not, you know, we don't have great sprint coaches in every single suburb in New Zealand. And
you need that community as well, eh?
You do. You need a training group. I would say for sprinting, you need training partners more than you do for distance running.
Yeah.
And one factor we've talked about previously, rugby probably steals a lot of our best athletes, steals them and ruins them.
Yep. Or at least steals that depth that we're talking about.
Yeah. So, look, really exciting. Liam Malone, a name to watch, but a name that we know a lot about, Nick Willis, and there's some news.
Yeah, so Nick's basically confirmed he's committing to another 4 years. On Twitter, he said likely 1500 in 2017 next year, and then 2018 switching up to a mix of the 15 and the 5K,
yeah,
which would be the Comm Games. So that would be an interesting one.
Comm Games, Gold Coast. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then focusing on the 5K most likely from there.
Yeah.
He's kind of said he'll keep doing the 15 so long as he can run 50 seconds and that for the 400.
Yep.
In training. So. That's kind of a good little marker.
Yep.
And when you think our national record's 46, so he's banging out a 49 in a training session.
Yep.
I mean, obviously, it's 3 seconds is a big
big gap, margin, but he's
a
genuinely fast dude.
Yeah.
It
shows in your mid-30s, you got to be quick.
Yeah. And look, I'm a huge fan of Nick, or it goes without saying. Yeah. I'm not sure about this move to 5,000 meters, and I have been the lone voice of dissent on this. Most people think he can step up and become a world-class 5,000-meter runner.
Mm.
And Nick, love you, mate, but nah, I just don't think he can do it.
Well, John Walker kind of regretted it, didn't he?
Yeah. John Walker has gone on record a couple of times as saying that his one kind of regret in terms of planning his career was having mucked around with the 5,000.
Yeah.
You know, it killed his speed for the 1,500. He ended up coming back to the 1,500 later.
Yeah, yeah.
And he felt that he had lost some speed by trying to run the 5K at the Olympics in 84. Yeah. And it's just a different physiology.
Yeah.
You know, there's athletes who have done it, but pure 1,500-meter runners who aren't on drugs, I don't think there's too many you can point to who have stepped up and run really well over 5K.
Yeah.
To be fair, I like it for the Commonwealth Games. I like it for a championship, maybe, you know, hoping the race goes out slow and comes down to a kick in the last few laps.
Yeah, yeah.
That's great. But once you're talking about a 13:10 race, I'm just not convinced.
Yeah.
You know, he's so good over 1,500. I'd love to see him just keep hammering it.
Oh, wouldn't it be amazing to see? I mean, how old would he be at Tokyo? 37?
37, yeah. That's old, I can tell you. That's old.
It is old. But guys like Bernard Laguette he's one of those cases who was 1,500 guy, but has moved up to the 5K and very successful. But, I definitely hear what you're saying as well. It involves a big shift as far as focus.
Mm. Yeah.
Switching to a lot more miles.
And he's and that's not to say I'm not excited about it.
Yeah.
And he even mentioned of running a marathon, and that really, like, I'm like, yeah, do it. You awesome. Know, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
And he, like, even how big for the sport would it be if Nick Willis ran Auckland Marathon?
Yeah.
You know? Like that would get the event on TV, you would hope.
Yeah.
If it
was
planned well enough.
That would be cool.
Yeah, the guy, to be honest, keeps surprising us because, he's at a level no one thought he would be at this age. So
totally.
If anyone can do it, Nick can.
Yeah, and speaking of surprising us, he said a little quote on stuff.co.nz saying, I don't think and this is on drugs, I don't think anybody should be confident about anyone. I don't think people should be confident about me. And the reason for that is because the system is corrupt. He said when asked if he was confident the gold and silver medalists from the 1500-meter race in Rio were clean. There, he goes on to say, there has been absolutely no proof that the people at the highest point have any desire to really make a difference.
Mm.
A lot of it seems to be for show, he added. So, yeah, some pretty strong comments. Coming from him. So.
And I love that the Kiwi guys, you know, Zane Robertson and Nick Willis and Val, you know, are coming out and talking about drugs.
Yeah.
To be honest, it makes a huge difference. So if we talk about Nick running the 5K or even the 1500 at Tokyo and aiming for a medal, if this drug problem isn't sorted out, you know, he's not going to medal. But if it's a level playing field, he's proven that he can mix it with the best.
So. Yeah. Very cool. Well, we'll take a little break, come back with Training Talk. Okay, so this week we wanted to talk about setting goals. So we've seen a lot of the guys come out of the Olympics either hang their shoes up for the season, like Nick has, and kind of plan out their goals for the next 4 years. And others have gone on to achieve some of their goals that they would have been targeting. Guys like Tom Walsh and also Val Adams leading the charge in the Diamond League. So we wanted to talk about how to go about setting goals with your own running.
Yeah.
What they should be, how audacious they should be, how you should get after chasing them. So what we wanted to kind of frame this conversation in is that concept of the SMART goal. So
yeah.
It's an acronym, which the S stands for specific, significant, stretching. M stands for measurable. A is achievable. R is realistic. And T is time-based.
Yeah.
So that gives you a little bit of a framework on how to put together your goals. And so obviously a lot of those, like the measurable one, running's perfect for that.
Because yeah, it is.
You have a stopwatch, you get a place, you have a certain event that's on a certain date. It's time-based. So running provides a great measure for a great ability for us to gauge our goals. But I guess today we want to talk about how to set them.
Yeah, well, and
what
even,
goals to go after.
Even slightly bigger than that.
Yeah.
You know, why set goals? So have you been a goal setter yourself through your running career, Hayden?
Yeah, I think probably more informally than formally. So
yeah.
Often, you know, you're just sitting on the train coming back from work or just out for a jog and you're like, I wonder if I could run this time, or I wonder if I could win this race, or enter this race, or complete a marathon. And all those sort of dreams go through your mind, and then they become goals because you enter them. And yeah,
I think you've hit on a key word here. So it's not really, in terms of setting goals, all the stuff we're about to talk about is exactly what you should do. But you don't sit down and do the stuff and come up with your goal. Your goal is your dream.
Yeah.
It's what motivates you. And so I think it's...
Totally.
Yeah, it is... What we're about to talk about is a formal process to make sure you can reach your goals.
Yeah.
Or that your goals are the right type of goals. But then, you know, before that, you've got to have that dream, that vision of what you want to do.
Yeah, and work out what floats your boat with your running.
Yeah.
Is it that experience of getting out there and doing like a Boston or a Great Wall of China marathon or something something crazy like that? Or is it chasing times and going after the numbers? Or is it getting Strava segments, you know?
Yeah. It's individual to each person. Like the example that pops to mind for me is a great New Zealand middle distance runner, Hamish Christensen, who was active through most 90s? Of the 90s.
Yeah.
Yep. And so what a lot of people don't know is Hamish Christensen actually broke the New Zealand junior steeplechase record.
Yeah.
And was a really, really talented steeplechaser. There were lots of people within the New Zealand running community, including, you know, the high performance types at Athletics New Zealand, who were like, you need to run the steeplechase. You need to run the steeplechase. And Hamish Christensen just said, well, I love the 1500.
Yeah.
I want to be a sub-4 minute miler. I want to, you know, go to world championships. I want to run in Europe and I want to do the 1500 meters. Yep. Steeplechase, yeah. But the 1500 was what really floated his boat. It was his gig. And cool. So, you know, sometimes it's not about sitting down and going, oh, you know, I talked about this last week and I'm a big fan of people going where they can have the most success.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You've got to go where your passion lies.
Yeah, totally. I was kind of the same actually when I got into running. Like my strength certainly isn't the 1500 because my 400 meter PBs just, I don't have those wheels. Like I certainly couldn't run under 50 seconds for a 400, but I loved it. I loved the distance. I loved the feeling of being in this cauldron of activity on the track. And
yeah.
It's a great distance. You feel You feel like you've had a killer workout after you've finished across the finish line, but you recover within a couple of days and you can be back the next weekend racing. It is a really fun distance.
It's definitely something worth thinking about. And so for me, I've struggled a little bit with my running goals and getting out there. And it's only recently that I've realized what my actual goal in running is, because my best years are behind me. You know, I'm not going to go to Tokyo. I'm not going to win national championships. My actual running goal, it literally came to me in a vision. What I want to be able to do is run with my friends. And specifically, the vision I had was I was running down the beach with no shirt on with some of my best friends and some running buddies. And anyone who's seen me in the past few months knows that me running without a shirt on is not a pretty sight. You don't want to see that. But, you know, literally your goal is your dream and it is literally your vision. And so spend some time mulling over that and what it is you actually want.
Yeah.
And no one can train you through that. But, you know, think long and hard and deeply about that, because I think finding that what really lights your fire is absolutely essential.
Yeah. And it is so cool in running. There are so many things that could light your fire.
Yeah.
Like for me, for a few years, it was that 1500 meter. I was trying to go sub 4.
Yeah.
Didn't quite get there, but that's another story. But for some people, it is like that experience of going overseas and doing a crazy race somewhere, or running your first marathon, or going sub 3 or sub 4 in a marathon.
Yeah.
There's so many different things you can get after.
Or having girls tell you how good your abs look, or whatever it is.
It's so varied. So it is very cool. Now, how do you know what is actually achievable? You can kind of sit there dreaming away with these goals.
Yeah.
But let's say that I was like, I want to break 2 for the marathon.
Yeah.
2 hours for the marathon. Is that a sensible goal for me? What do you reckon?
No, because it's not achievable. I hope he's not listening. Stefan Smith is the guy that
he will be listening. He loves the show.
So really, look, and I don't know exactly, but I think you can sabotage yourself by setting goals that are too ambitious. Yeah. So we all have an ultimate goal, a big, hairy, audacious goal of where we want to go.
Yeah.
So if you're a young buck and you want to, you know, go to the Olympics, or you want to win a big marathon one day or pick up a national medal, have that goal. There's nothing wrong with that goal. That's the big, hairy, audacious goal. You want to almost have it out there, but it shouldn't be your goal that you're working towards. Your goal needs to be achievable. And so in terms of improvement, it should be within a few percentage points. And the reason I mentioned Stefan is Stefan was a great, great runner, but he was always, and this is my perspective, he was always chasing the Commonwealth Games qualifying time, or the World Cross Country Championship qualifying standard. And he was always kind of a bit back from that, like 10% back. So instead of focusing on 1% improvement and then another 1% improvement, he was always focusing on 10% improvement. And to a certain extent, it kind of sabotaged what he was trying to achieve, because the jump he was trying to make was too big. So this is one where you almost definitely need some independent advice as to what is achievable for you.
Yeah, and it's definitely good to go to a coach who's walked through with a bunch of athletes from that dreaming phase through to actually training and reaching the goals and seeing what is actually achievable.
Yeah.
Like, it would be interesting, someone like Tom Walsh, to talk to him 4 or 5 years ago and say, okay, what's in your 4-year plan?
Yeah.
You know, would have Rio been in there? Would have a medal been in there? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not.
Yeah.
But I imagine he would have kept adjusting that goal as he went each year.
Yeah. Look, and if you're getting better, you can never complain.
Yeah.
So, you know, as long as you're improving, you're heading absolutely in the right direction. And I'll reiterate the point. It is great to have an end game, a big, hairy, audacious goal, that gold, your gold medal, no matter what that is personally for you.
Yeah.
Having that as your immediate goal that you set all of your plans around is almost never a good idea.
Yeah.
Because it's within a short time frame, it's a step too far. Your risk of training too hard or becoming disheartened is just too great. So set incremental, achievable goals.
Yeah, absolutely. And I kind of look back at my my goal of breaking four for the 1500.
Yeah.
I was kind of a 4:10 guy when I started
yeah.
going after that goal. And I was just like, right, I'll do all my 400 meter reps at 4:03, 63 per
yeah.
lap.
So and, goal pace.
Yeah, yeah, goal pace.
This is really, and this is this illustrates my point, because it's actually really counterproductive.
Yeah.
So as a 4:10 runner, running 63s is so far
yeah, yeah.
off a sensible training pace for you yeah. that it is counterproductive.
So yeah, so I should have been running 66s.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And which is what I ended up doing. But I always had in this mind, oh, I want to be that 350 guy.
Yeah. How yeah. long did you strive to break four?
I did, I think, 3 seasons on the track. I was going after yeah. that sub four goal.
And what did you get down to?
So I ran 4:03 a bunch of times.
Yeah.
The one time where I had the best shot of doing it, I actually had spent a few days in Christchurch and picked up food poisoning.
Yeah.
After the earthquakes.
Yeah.
So I ended up being in Dunedin at the national track champs with a pretty crook gut. I was on track for a sub four.
Yeah.
And the last lap just blew apart.
Oh, that's tough.
Woke up in ED.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah, lay down at the side of the track and drank too much water, which is the other bad thing I did then,
yeah.
Which diluted my electrolytes, being that they were already depleted from having a crook gut
yeah.
after being in Christchurch, and, yeah, wake up in ED.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was that's a whole other big story. But in the end, after that, I had to kind of let it go, because it was kind of a scary, hyponatremia, that is a very scary place to be, going unconscious and waking up a few hours later.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I gave up on the track, actually, and I haven't been back, aside from the odd little race.
Yeah.
But that's okay, because I've changed my focus, and I may get back to the track at some stage, but I've decided, right, I'm going to focus on roads, and I'm going to focus on 5K to the marathon, and I'm getting a lot of joy out of that.
Yeah.
So
I guess that covers off the achievable stuff we've driven home.
Yeah.
What else do we need to look at?
Yeah, well, I mean, are there any bad goals out there? I mean, we've just talked about setting too high a goals. Can you go too low?
I guess I go back to what I was saying before. If the goal doesn't light your fire,
yeah,
then that's a bad goal.
Yeah.
So if your goal is to, you know, run a half marathon under 90 minutes, and you've already done that 6 times, and you've done the race, you're doing 3 times a 4, you know, that might not really be that exciting for you.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I have a lot of this. So specific running goals, like, you know, running a marathon or a half marathon and I'm never going to be as fast as I once was. So saying I want to run under 80 minutes for a half marathon, that would be a huge achievement for me. It would be great.
Yeah.
Doesn't light my fire, because I used to run 72. So
yeah.
Like, yeah. So yeah. It's tough. If I was a sports psychologist, I think I would say a bad goal is comparing yourself to someone else. So saying I want to beat Hayden.
Yeah.
So I'm running the Auckland Marathon and Hayden's running the Auckland Marathon, and I don't like the cut of his jib. His hair is messy, and he's just...
Most of the time it is.
Poor personal hygiene, and I'm going to beat Hayden.
Yeah.
So that, a lot of people would argue that's a bad goal, because I can't control your performance on the day. What's your kind of thoughts on that one?
Yeah, on bad goals, I totally agree. Like, if something's not audacious enough, it can definitely just be a bit blasé. I think a change of environment is a really good thing to do. So if you've been after that 90 minute half marathon or whatever, a 2 hour half marathon for ages, maybe actually saying, right, I'm not going to go for time, but I'm going to go over to Gold Coast, which is a traditionally fast half marathon, but I'm just going to go and have a blast and
yeah,
and maybe even not look at my watch for the first
enjoy
10K,
the pre-race just, expo,
yeah,
go to the pasta party, try and hit on some girls or guys, yeah,
and run the race by feel.
Yeah.
And you might get dragged along to a reasonably good time, or you might be in the hurt locker and
yeah,
be a big positive split and struggle on home. But that experience might light the fire again for coming back and giving the time a go another time. So, yeah, definitely changes of scene can be good, mixing up your goals.
Yep. I'm going to come back to the basing your goals on another person thing.
Yeah.
Have you ever done this? Have you ever gone, my goal is to beat?
I don't know if I really have. I've definitely had a couple of little rivalries.
Yeah.
Probably the biggest rivalry that I've had was I used to be in a running club called Scottish Athletics in Wellington. And so we had a relay team, two relay teams. Well, they'd send lots of relay teams, but the A and the B team. So I was always in the B team. But it was almost, you wanted to be in the B team, because as soon as you got into the B team, your goal was to beat the A team runner and see how many A team scalps you could get. And there was this one year where I think we got, out of eight runners, three or four A team scalps. And it was legendary because the B team was ahead of the A team for a lot of the race. And it was, that was a very cool experience. So that was a case where that rivalry goal actually worked quite well, but it was a short term.
And it's funny because I completely agree that it's not healthy. But for me, growing up and becoming better at track and field, those rivalry goals were hugely important to me. So there was a couple of key guys, Dan Smith from Tauranga. So I was kind of a nobody, nothing, like, you know, ranked outside the top five in the Waikato Bay of Plenty. So the Tauranga guys were way better. And there was a couple of guys in Hamilton who were better. And Dan Smith was the best in New Zealand his age.
Yeah.
Cool. And I just, he's a great guy, but I just didn't like the look of him. I just
wanted to beat him.
And I was very focused on beating him. And just by cutting it down and making it real simple, and I want to beat Dan, it took me from being Neville nobody to being one of the best in New Zealand.
Yeah, cool.
Without even, and I basically didn't notice. All of a sudden I was picking up medals at, you know, national championships and the teams and whatnot, and it was just because I'd gotten better, but just by focusing on wanting to beat Dan. And then one other guy, Dale Ashley.
Yeah,
I just desperately wanted to beat Dale Ashley.
All these old rivalries coming
up. Yeah. And these guys are just like, man, why how weird is this guy still hung up on these old rivalries? But they were huge for me.
You're kind of saying that these rivalries can be good goals and bad goals? Or
good goals and bad goals. You should just focus on yourself and your own stuff.
Yeah.
Like I had a teammate at Lamar who was just obsessed with beating me, and I felt like it was detrimental to his performance. One, because he was never going to beat me because I wouldn't let him, but you know, it created a bit of an unhealthy environment. But you know, the guys that I competed against, they were in different clubs and had different coaches, so it was just kind of healthy. But I don't know.
That's cool.
I want to play at both sides.
Awesome. Well, next week we're going to dig a little bit deeper into exactly, once you've set one of these goals, how do you go about hunting them down and creating the processes that can lead towards the goals, and also the stepping stone goals that you pick up along the way to the big goal.
So important, like process goals.
Yeah.
So really look forward to delving into this a little bit further next week.
Yeah. So kind of cool to hear both of our. I guess for me, like, it's been a bit of a disappointment in my running, that going after that sub-4 goal and not getting it. But that's all right. I loved the training. I loved the racing. And that goal helped me get through all that and gave me great experiences along the way. So I don't really have any regrets that I didn't get there. It's just a number.
Yeah.
And really enjoyed the racing. So
yeah.
Yeah, well, thanks everyone for joining and listening to the show again. We really do appreciate it. Keep your feedback coming. Flick us an email on krs@tempofit.org.
Yep.
And we will catch you next week.
Talk soon.